We're going to be in the book of James this morning. I love this particular book because it deals with a number of things concerning before I get into it, but it does deal with a number of things. It talks about the tongue, how we should be careful about that. It talks about a loving God under trials and tribulation. It talks about the qualities needed in trials and doers and not hearers only. And we're not going to get through this whole book, chapter of them, this whole book. But we will get through some of it, and I think we'll pick out the ones that I figured that was, that are vital to us. But now, there are four men that's mentioned by the name of James in the New Testament. Now, the first one is James, the son of Zebedee. The son of Zebedee. And he's also the brother of John. And you'll find that in Matthew 4:21. He's also a disciple and an apostle of Jesus Christ. Everyone knows, in order for someone to be an apostle, he has to have been able to see and walk with Jesus Christ. Where these folk come from today with this business about the apostles is beyond me. But there are men that claim they are, even for women, far that go. The second James is the son of Alphaeus. You find that in Matthew 10:3. He's also called the left, or the younger, also one of the apostles. The third James is the father of an apostle named Judas Iscariot. And you find it in Luke 6:16. And then there's the fourth James, which is the half-brother of Jesus Christ. And he is the writer of the epistle, James. He's also one of the leaders, one of the strong leaders in the church located in Jerusalem. Your brother nodded here. He know he's been in school. He already know all this stuff. But he's not picking on this morning. But I just love this book. I've read it many, many times. But I'm going to let somebody else do a little bit of reading this morning. I'm not going to go in the very first chapter, because I find that there's a lot of things interesting in that. I tell you what I will do. I will go in the first chapter, and I will go down to verse, starting with verse number 9. We're going to get somebody to read the first three verses, 9, 10, and 11, and we'll just talk about that for a few seconds before we move on. I'm going to call on some folks. Sometimes how I get volunteers. Yeah, you look at that. So I'm going to let you read the first three verses in James chapter 1, 9, 10, and 11.
The brother in humble circumstances ought to take pride in his position,
And I looked at this verse, these verses. Just how does that relate to some of us today concerning those who don't have quite as much as some others when it comes to those who are rich and those who are poor? Thank you. Anyone else? All right. I find it very interesting that you would mention that. Even James talked about it. If we go further, and he talked about the individual who is poor comes in the church and has very little. He looks like he has rags on. And we happen to show favoritism toward those who look good in the fancy suit, the nice tie, the nice shoes, look like $1 million. And many people don't want to sit next to someone, even in the lordship sometimes, that doesn't have as much as they do. This business about favoritism is something that really needs to be addressed in the Lord's Church. I'm so glad that we don't have a serious dress code. As long as you look and presentable, we should do what we can to just please God. Now, I am totally against something when it comes to these shirts with all this writing on the front. I think sometimes that, particularly if you stand at the serving the table, I think it does something to my mind anyway. It gets my mind a lot of time off of what I should be focused on. And I think a person just dressed nice, nice shirt, nice pair of slacks if you got them. But you don't have to just one of these high, fancy names, too. You don't have to do that. Now, I've been one, I've always lacked clothes. So that's just a thing that I was born the way I was raised, you know. So I don't have a problem with that. But I also know how to respect others that don't have like I do. You know, if I got something that I can help somebody, may have a need of tie. I think I got enough of them that I can let them have one. You know, that's not a problem. But we need to make sure that we treat everyone as we would like to be treated ourselves. All right.
Thank you. There's two ways.
There's only one true head, and that's Christ. He the one died on the cross. I haven't died for anybody. Christ died for me. And I don't know, I'm so glad that the brothers that's here and the eldership, all of us get along well, and we don't act like we more than we are. There's no head elders here. Everybody is equal. So I'm glad you're absolutely right about that. And as a matter of fact, I do want to say one other thing. When I grew up, you say a four, P-O-O-R, I was poor, P-O-R. So I already know, you know what I'm saying? So that's kind of how it is. Yeah. Yeah.
And he says, he grew up before him like a young child and like a root out of dry ground. He had no form or majesty that we should look at him, and no beauty that we should desire him.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, we always have to have that moment of introspection and think, all right, if I'm so caught up on outer appearance, if Jesus were to walk in with no form of majesty, would I recognize him? Or would I be so caught up on, you know, what's on the outside that I said, oh, my body, you know, I don't have any attention. Can't do that. You know, we have to consider every person as someone made in the image of the Almighty God. For that reason alone, they deserve our attention and respect.
Right. You have to remember Judas, for those soldiers to recognize Christ, he had to kiss him because he looked like everybody else. That's one of the things, you know, that Jesus is going to be brought to your attention about Christ. He never acted as though he was better than anyone else. But he was always willing to help those that less fortunate. And everybody needed him. Whether they wanted to admit it or not, everybody needed him. Absolutely. Thank you for that, brother. Appreciate that. All right. All this stuff in James is good. Let's see. Look at verse 19. I think this is real interesting. 19 and 20. Charlie, could you read those 19 and 20? I think that's a strong, strong lesson for all of us right there. You know, particularly, you know, we need to be very, very careful with our words and our speaking. And I should say, you read it. Speak. we need to be careful with that. And let's be mindful, you know. And these are the qualities we need, no matter how tough it gets. You know, some folks, they don't care what you say out of the mouth. When times get rough, times get tight, things are not going the way they wanted to go. And sometimes the language can get a little strong. And we need to be really careful about that. And we need to have the right qualities when these trials come. Because if you live long enough, you're going to have some time. And some of us, a whole lot of them, you know. But we got to know as Christians how to handle these trials when they come. Thank you for that. Any other comment? Now, we're going to go now because I want, you know, I want to get over that chapter 3. We're going to read. We've already dealt with the first part of chapter 2 with the favoritism. So let's go down to starting with verse 14, and we're going to be dealing with the faith without the works is dead. So we're going to look at that. Starting with 14, and we're going to read down to verse number 26. But we can split it up. Charles, I'm going to let you read verses 14 down to verse 21. And then I'm going to ask, let's see. But Jerry, as you can read from verse 22 down to verse 26. And still we see in the second chapter. Verse 14 down to 21 and then from 22 to 26. And you got that from me. Thank you.
See that faith was working together with his works, and by works faith was made perfect. And the scripture was fulfilled, which says, Abraham believed God, and it was counted to him for righteousness. And he was called the friend of God. You see then that a man is justified by works and not by faith only. Likewise, was not Rahab the harlot also justified by works when she received the messengers and sent them out another way? For as the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without works is dead also.
Isn't it interesting concerning this faith and work? They have to work together. A person cannot be saved by faith only. Neither can a person be saved by the works that he do. You have to have a lot of, first of all, you got to have some love. Stone in there with that work and faith. It's very important that we have that. Any comments on some of this before I say a little bit more concerning the things that we just read?
Well,
What comes to your mind when it comes to faith and works?
Well, there are a lot of people that say that you can't do enough works to receive the great reward, which in essence is true. But to try to receive the great reward without doing any works is going to be impossible.
Absolutely.
So you better start blending the two and do what the Lord says and what James says in here. You better show your faith, approve your faith by showing what your heart's supposed to tell you to do, what God's trying to tell you to do, and show some action, show some results, show some giving or service on your part.
Absolutely. Yeah.
God tells us not to earn the salvation, but because we already have the salvation, and we should be conducting our lives as if we know that. Conducting our lives as if we really are citizens of heaven, as if we really are children of God. Mm-hmm. So God gives the gift, and now we're changing our lives to reflect the fact that we understand the gift that we've been given. And that's really different. Look at others. Everybody else wants you to work to be good enough. And that's fine for people to do it. And they're really specific. You have to do this thing just like this. You don't do it just like this. And you don't do it just as good as I did it. You're not going to get a reward. But Christianity isn't like that. If you have faith, it can compensate for your inability to do it all. As long as you do something.
Thank you.
I understand
exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's just an observation I had. And I mean, these are beautiful people, but they're missing the point in life. They're just missing it. And they have so many resources that they could do good work for the Lord and have both, the faith and work, and have a good life, but they're just missing that piece of it.
Yeah. And you know, that's so very true. Just like we read already about somebody who's poor and they come to you for help and you tell them, you know, give them every kind of reason other than what they need for help. A good Christian will find a way to help someone that's in need, someone who's hungry. We will try to do whatever we can to help them. And I think a lot of times when you can, good morning. I think a lot of times when you can have the attitude that you need to have to help someone that's less fortunate than you are, that's fulfilling within itself. You know, and you can't do anything. I don't care what money you have. If you don't have cash in your life, you can pretty much forget about it. Because he's the one who allowed you to have. But just like you got it, you can end up like that guy, what his name, Wall, what that fella took all that money? Well, you know what I'm talking about. Got all those years.
Madoff.
Thank you. You know, you can lose it. I'm not saying in that way. But God blesses you to have it. He can take it away from you, you know, and that's so true. Yeah. Didn't Jamie talk about this?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Before we get to this part, he talked about that.
Yeah.
So we have to remember, have to look at brothers and sisters who have more than us. You ought to feel more than us.
Yeah.
Kind of figure out.
The man in the mirror that we really need to be. That's one song that Michael Jackson put out
there.
Yeah, but yeah, that's so true. Because we are so quick to judge people that have a little more than we do, and why can't they do a little bit more? And you know, I've been guilty of it, thinking that way, having that mindset. And you have to realize you don't know how they got it. A lot of people just work plain long hard, and they work hard to try to make sure they keep a little bit, you know. But also in keeping it, make sure you give it too, particularly to the Lord. And I don't say to the Lord, I ain't saying you have to give it, but make sure you give your part that you're supposed to give to Him. That helps, and you're absolutely right. Absolutely right. We're going to, where we at? What time is it? Yeah. Oh yeah, we got time. We are going to look at chapter 3. That's one of my favorite chapters because it's dealing with this, dealing with that tongue. We're going to get some readers here. Chapter 3, verse, somebody can read the first 12, verse. I'll go down to verse 10 verses. Yeah, it doesn't matter what version you have.
My brethren, be not many masters, knowing that we should receive the greater condemnation. For in many things we offend all. If any man offend not in word, the same is a perfect man, and able also to bridle the whole body. Behold, we put bits in the horse's mouth, that they may obey us and return about their whole body. Behold also the ships, which though they be so great, and are driven of fierce winds, yet are they turned about with a very small throng. Whithersoever the governor listeth. Even so the tongue is a little member, and a boast of great things, Behold, how great a matter a little fire kindles. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among our members, that it defileth the whole body, and setteth on fire the course of nature, and it is set on fire of hell. For every kind of beast and bird, and of serpents, and of things in the sea, and pain, and hath intended to be unkind. But the tongue can no man. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. Therewith bless we God, even the Father, and therewith bless we God, which remains after the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth which he lives, blessings and curses, my brethren, these things ought not to be not for you. Drop a fountain came forth at the same place, he fell and did it. And if this tree, my brethren, the olive tree, the vine tree, trust in that fountain, both of you, salt water and salt.
Okay. Thank you for the reading. Thank you so much for the reading. That tongue is very powerful. But I like the examples that James uses, how a man can control the big beast like a horse, put a bit in his mouth, put reins on him, and he can make him go left or right. He can pull back on him and make him, stop. You can do all that with a, I don't know how much the horse weighs, but he's pretty big animal. And you can control it. And then he talks about the rudder on a ship. I've seen a rudder on a ship. It is small compared to this big, the size of the ship itself. It can control that ship and make it, you know, turn it. It's not going to turn quickly. It'll turn gradually. You can control it. You can control it. I find it quite interesting the way God has designed the very things that he put on earth for man to be able to handle. But no one that I know of can control the tongue. The only one that can control the tongue is who?
The Holy Spirit within you.
Yeah.
Working within you.
The very individual, each individual here has to be able to do that. I've seen wars started because somebody said something they shouldn't have said. And I've seen a lot of people hurt because somebody told a lie. And these things ought not be. But who is he writing this to? He's writing this to members of the church. Because we're the ones who need to make sure we can control our tongue and be careful of what we say. I know somebody got something to say on this one. Yes, Doc. And you know, absolutely, before I get right to you, one thing about that, speaking and saying something to someone, you can't take it back. And even when you apologize, in the back of the person's mind, they know you said it. Sometimes you can still forgive them, but it's still there in your mind because you heard it. You know? And it's such a hurtful thing. We can be very hurtful in the words we use. I've seen two hands. I've seen him first, then you both.
Yeah, when I think about all the things that I've said in my life, one of the most hurtful things that I ever said, I remember I was in fifth grade, and before was my friend, and I don't know why I did this. I know why I did it. I was calling him here, but we were going back and forth feeding each other. And I knew that his mother had recently passed within the year. And I got caught up in trying to make everybody else laugh at him. I told him, I said, if I had a son as ugly as you, I would not do it. Yeah, I said that. I said that. And the reason why I tell you that is because I don't ever want you to look at me and think, wow, he's such a great Christian. Okay? Thank God for the grace that he gives us and for the forgiveness of Jesus Christ. I can share that without shame because I know I've been forgiven and I'm free of that. But how, if I remember it now, that was, that was 20-some years ago. If I remember it now, and I wasn't on the receiving end, I don't know what he's doing. Surely he remembers it. And, you know, if you talk about how your words can direct the course of life, how did I direct the course of his life? It's such a disgusting thing to say. But it's like, I can't snatch down the room. It's out. It's out there. So, thank you for being here. Be careful. If there was any way by the power of God, I would take those words back. Your hand.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, I was talking about earlier recommendations of boxing, Muhammad Ali. Watching how he talks to people. And now looking back at it, the way he talked to George Foreman and Joe Frazier, wow, it's just so bad. But, you know, when you're a fan here, you think it's okay. But, man, that's pretty terrible with the way he used when he called Joe Frazier. And, you know, sometimes maybe he's kind of in his head. I know that's what he was trying to do, but. Man, that is so hurtful. That tongue.
Yeah.
That was the most common hurt. People might think you jab you get. That tongue. That tongue's very mean and nasty.
One of the things I'm glad you mentioned, Muhammad Ali, is Bill Frazier was really a very decent man. I remember, as you, many of us who are old enough to remember when. His title was taken from him. I'm talking about Ali. And Joe Frazier went to him and told him, if there's anything financially I can do to help you, I'm going to do it. That was the kind of man he was. And for Muhammad Ali, I lost a lot of respect for him because of that.
Did he get this after Ali had come bad away?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did a lot of things. And Frazier, he didn't lack it, you know. And but you know, I hate to say this, but look at Ali now. He has Parkinson's and sometimes the things he say comes back to haunt us in our physical life, and we have to be very, very careful. But Christians in particular don't want to be calling one another names and saying things we ought not say. And that's just the way it is. We need to be very careful with the tongue.
Ray, when you think about it, that little part of your body that caused more pain, suffering, and even death than any other part of the body.
Oh yeah.
You can't do the same damage with your foot or your eye or your ear as that tongue can do.
Yeah.
More pain and suffering.
I've seen more people. Some of these folks, some of them I go to dialysis with. And she's not all up there, not all there, poor thing. But I tell you, some of these folks cuss. You know, I'm talking about women. She's cuss. And I'm telling you, I just don't And so, you know, I'm bowing my head, and I'm a man, you know. And I don't imagine nobody know what I'm talking about, but I would dare call a name. But it's really sad. We have to, I mean, a lot of things I did before I was a, before I became a Christian that I'm ashamed of. But we need to be very, very careful about how we talk to one another, how we treat one another. And this name calling, children can really be cruel. Sometimes they're more cruel than adults. You know, I've never seen the kind of stuff that we're going through now with bullying and all the foolishness now. You know, all I want my child to do when they're growing up is go to school and learn. That's all I want to do. Well, at that time, there wasn't any bullying when my, even when my children were going. You had one or two bad guys when I was going to school that called thought they were bad. But, you know, that's kind of how it is. Time and age generation. Yeah. No. No. Yeah. Yeah, he's always been kind of tall. Yeah, he, you know, and kind of, he kind of big, he's a big guy. Yeah. But yeah, yeah. But I don't worry about him. And even my baby brother, God bless him. He's been incarcerated, and I never worried about him. But one time I remember he could bench press 400 pounds. So I didn't worry about him bothering. I never worried about him while he was locked up. But he is just a guy, I just can't get him to come back to church. He is a member of the church. And when I see him, I'm going to remind him, look how good God's been to him, you know. But, that tongue is a dangerous thing. And we need to be very, very careful. Where we at? Where we at? I don't want to overgo. Yeah, we are. Overgone. It's over. It's over. I want to thank you all for your attentiveness this morning, and I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right.
Get the lights on.
Thank you.